Welcome to Conversations with David Lewis. Today, we are continuing my conversation with the former UN ambassador, Andrew Young, also the former Atlanta mayor, and for that matter, former congressman. We are talking about Muhammad Ali and his impact on America. What was it like, you know, you stressed that Ali was a revolution for all people, not just black folks. But what was it like for black folks to see somebody talk that way, you know, and be so strong in the face of everything?
Well, we'd had the older folk. I wasn't old enough, but Jack Johnson was that way.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Johnson was an in-your-face kind of black man.
Mm-hmm.
And but Joe Lewis became a kind of integrated hero because his fights with Max Schmeling were basically fights between America and Nazism.
So
he gained a big white following for boxing because he was fighting against Hitler's champion.
Yeah, the symbol of the Nazis. Yeah.
And so we were. There had been first a loud, wrong, independent, don't give a damn kind of black man as a champion, completely in your face on everything.
Jack Johnson.
Jack Johnson. Yeah. Then there was
dating white women flamboyantly, and
Then there was a gentleman. A gentleman era of sports, which was characterized by Joe Lewis, but also Jesse Owens and Jackie Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they never lost it. They never allowed themselves to lose their cool.
What about jazz musicians? I'm thinking of, Miles Davis or Charles Mingus.
Well, I tell you, but it was... Their music, the music of Miles Davis and Charlie Mingus was revolutionary, confrontational, but not so much Miles Davis. Miles Davis was the king of cool.
Yeah,
I actually performed his wedding to Cecily Tyson.
Really?
And even in the wedding, I say, do you take this woman to be your lawful wedded wife? And he was standing there with his eyes closed. And he didn't say a word for a long time. And then he said, yeah. I said, you got to be cool at the wedding.
Yeah, even at your own wedding. Wow.
But that the jazz era was symbolic. It was a symbolic revolution, as was the spirituals. And though we were part of a confrontation with democracy, we very clearly did it in the context of democracy.
Right.
And the thing that Martin Luther King made very clear at the March on Washington, we are here because of the American dream. And we want America to live out the true meaning of its creeds, see that all men are created equal and endowed with by their creator with certain inalienable rights. So we were tying ourselves directly to the Constitution. And there's a sense in which Muhammad Ali was exercising one of his constitutional rights, but nobody had ever quite done it that way before.
What were the interactions, or I don't know if there were any, between Dr. King and Ali, or what did Dr. King have to say about Ali?
Well, believe it or not, in private, Muhammad Ali was a very quiet man. And he spoke very softly, very respectfully. And it was almost as though there was a split personality. There was a, of course, I guess most performers are that way, that they perform on the stage and in private. They're really quite, I mean, even someone like Richard Pryor, you know, Red Fox, and whom I knew from down here, he was on stage all the time. So he was always the comic.
Same person.
Yeah. But most people have an
on-off switch.
a stage personality and a private personality.
Right.
And Muhammad Ali was that way. I went to Japan with him once, and he very seldom said much on the plane. You know, he talked and he walked around and was friendly, but he didn't try to take it over and put on a show.
Now, you mentioned before we started that you just had been talking to some of Ali's team, some of his people. Mm-hmm. What were your ongoing, what was your ongoing relationship with Ali over the years?
Well, it was pretty steady because he knew we had gotten him back into the fight game by getting the Quarry fight staged here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was 1971 or something like that, 70, 71. So he really liked Atlanta. He respected Atlanta. But by the same token, we were working in Chicago by 1966. And as a matter of respect, we always let Elijah Muhammad know what we were doing. As we did all of the other important preachers in town. We didn't go into another town and try to take it over and ignore the local leadership. We involved the local leadership in what we were doing. Muhammad Ali never got much involved in that, in the movement. But he was very devout in his Islamic commitments,
mm-hmm.
and did a lot of work. And I think the Nation of Islam, as it's called here, probably has done the best job of any religious or social institution in dealing with ex-offenders. Because, well, all of them practically had been to jail.
Mm.
And when you came out of jail, you couldn't find a job.
Right.
So Elijah Muhammad...
That ain't that different today.
No, Elijah Muhammad, though, started these businesses.
Bakeries.
Yeah. The fish restaurants, laundromats. And he helped this group of ex-offenders become economically independent because they were owning their own businesses and not having to work for someone else.
Right, and of course, prison was where Malcolm X was exposed to Islam. So
Malcolm X was also a self-educated man, who educated himself by reading the dictionary.
So you know, back to Ali, I mean, and to sort of sum up, what did this man's life mean?
Well, he was the first athlete, I think, that became a global personality, in the sense that he gave sports a foreign policy. I mean, to go to Zaire, nobody had heard of Zaire. I had happened to have just been to Zaire just before the fight to a conference. That was about 1974, but I'd never been to Africa before 1974. And then all of a sudden, I go to Kenya to a World Bank meeting. I'm in another meeting in Zaire. And then I went to South Africa with Arthur Ashe to a tennis tournament. So I got inundated with Africa in 1974. And that was just before the rumble in the jungle. He really put Africa on the map. But he never made it a race thing. the next fight, I think, was it George Foreman, the Thriller in Manila?
Well, that would have, no, Joe Frazier. That Joe would have been, yeah, yeah. Thriller in Manila, yeah.
Well, anyway, I've gotten it back. One of them, one way.
George
one
Foreman way. Was Zaire, yeah.
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 But anyway, it made us aware of other people. And Muhammad Ali didn't go like most government officials go. And go from one to airport to the government office to the hotel and back to the airport. He hung out in the restaurants. He walked the streets. He went into the playgrounds, see. And he really became a hero.
Yeah.
For the people.
On that wonderful documentary about the fight in Zaire where you mm-hmm. see all the people, you know, as he's doing his road work, you know, mm-hmm. chanting for him. And, you know, I met him later in life when he got an award from President Clinton, and someone else I knew was getting the same award, so was there. And one thing that struck me was how big his hand was. I mean, his fist was about twice the size of mine yeah. when you shook his hand. Just in conclusion, what's his legacy?
His legacy is a determination to be the person that God made him, regardless of what the social strictures of race, creed, class, national origin were. He was a child of God, and that meant he was a brother to all men and women. And he acted that way. He had no, he never saw a stranger. I think the last time I spent with him was out at the airport. We were going somewhere different, but we were in the same VIP lounge, and I went in to see him, and they asked him, I don't know whether it was somebody's cheerleaders were coming through, one of the professional football teams that had been here, their cheerleaders were going back or something like that, and they wanted to come in and meet him. And by that time, he was well along in his Alzheimer's stage. And he had not said a word to me. I was talking to his wife, Lonnie, and you had the feeling that he could understand. And when the young man said, there are a group of cheerleaders out here that would like to meet you and take a picture with you. Is that all right? And he just grinned. And when a dozen pretty women came in the room, he just lit up.
Yeah. Well, speaking of lighting up, I mean, I remember at the 96 Olympics, I happened to be at the basketball finals. And then when the U.S. won, to everyone's surprise, Ali was the one who awarded the medals. And to see these superstars like Michael Jordan and Charles Barkley, to see the look on their faces, they were in awe, and it was a really neat moment to see their surprise and their respect and pleasure in that man.
No, and I think that's what, before anybody knew he was going to light the torch, he came here for a meeting, and he called me up and said he wanted a haircut. And I said, okay, I'll get the barber to come down to your room. What time do you want him? He said, no. Where do you get your hair cut? And I told him, and he said, come take me to your barber. And it was a barber shop and beauty parlor combined. And when he walked in, mm-hmm. It took him an hour to go from beginning to end around, taking pictures with everybody, kissing all the babies and hugging the women. And then he got his hair cut, and he didn't want to go back to the hotel. And we happened to be right about two or three blocks from a Muslim, Rahim's Fish Supreme. So I said, well, let's go on over here and get lunch. And the whole crowd followed him over into the restaurant. And we sat there and had lunch, and he didn't sign autographs so much, but he was always anxious to take a picture.
Well, yes, and he was.
And
yeah.
he'd take a picture not standing still, but he'd put up his fist mm-hmm. and sort of put his fist on your jaw, you know, for the picture.
Well, I've got a nice picture of my two daughters with him. They were must have been aged, you know, 6 and 9 mm-hmm. or something. And
well, one of my favorite pictures is when he was down, he came by City Hall, and somebody had convinced him to endorse somebody's shoe polish. And he brought a shoe shine stand and set it up outside my office in City Hall. And they wanted him to shine my shoes as a publicity stunt. I said, no way. I said, champ, you never shined any shoes. You don't know a thing about shining shoes. Get up there and let me show you how to shine shoes. So they took a picture of me shining his shoes. And
and there's the picture.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's one of my favorite pictures.
That is great.
Yeah.
That is great. Mm-hmm. What a life. Mm-hmm. Well, Ambassador Andrew Young, thank you so much for coming in to talk about this legend and hero of mine. I greatly appreciate it.
Well, and don't forget that your father was a legend and hero of mine.
Thank you.
And there's a book. I guess she didn't get his. She may have. It's Jimmy Carter in Africa, Race and the Cold War. And by a young woman up in North Carolina, Nancy Mitchell.
Okay.
At North Carolina State. But I don't know a reporter that spent more time talking to as many people, black and white, government in government and out, as your father did in that same period in Southern Africa.
Well, he spent a lot of time there. Mm-hmm. Even married a South African when he got a second shot at a marriage. So, thank you so much.